Professor Sue Carter here with you on Current State in for the vacationing Mark Bayshore. The rise of genetically modified organisms, or GMOs, over the last two decades has triggered persistent concerns for health and for the environment. The GMO debate has been part of an ongoing discussion on greening of the Great Lakes heard on WKAR's MSU Today. Dr. Kirk Heinze hosts the feature, which is also heard occasionally here on Current State. Today, Kirk talks with Dr. Rebecca Grummet of the MSU Department of Horticulture and the graduate program in plant breeding, genetics, and biotechnology. Dr. Heinze first asked Professor Grummet to define genetically modified organism.
Genetically engineered organisms are organisms into which a new gene has been introduced to confer a desired trait. So, for example, greater than 95% of all of the insulin that is used today for treatment of diabetes is produced in bacteria that have been engineered to include a gene for the production of insulin. And the advantage to this is that we now can produce insulin in vats of bacteria rather than having to extract it from the pancreas of pigs. When we're talking about crop plants, genes have been introduced to help control insects, diseases, weeds, and environmental stresses such as drought.
I haven't. It's true. A lot of people aren't aware of it, but we've been doing biotechnology, genetic engineering, GMOs for a long time in research and science, particularly in agriculture.
Well, actually, it depends on how you're going to define genetic engineering and genetic modification. So the newer technologies that involve the introduction of specific genes, that's been done for a short amount of time, and I'll come back to that. But the general concept of genetic modification, we've been doing that since the dawn of agriculture. And I think it's easiest to visualize this if you think about dog breeds. Think about a Cocker Spaniel or a large spotted Dalmatian. Now, neither of those dogs would exist as they are in nature. They're the result of human genetic modification. They're the result of breeding efforts by people over the eons. And similarly, if we think about crop plants, they also have undergone extensive genetic modification. First, they were domesticated from the wild, and then over time, they began to be selected for traits that we considered valuable, whether it be yield or flavor or good baking quality or disease or insect resistance. And so these modifications have been occurring over a long period of time. The difference with modern genetic engineering is that now the genes can come from other species, and so they can be used to introduce a trait such as insect resistance that would not be available by conventional breeding. But because the genes can come from other species, extensive regulatory systems and safety testing has been put in place to assure the safety of these products. Another thing that we can think about is that the extent of change that's occurring by these methods, the newer genetic engineering methods versus conventional breeding. So, for example, coming back to the dog case, if you were to cross a Cocker Spaniel with a Dalmatian, you could imagine that very many traits would be affected. But in contrast with genetic engineering, we're introducing typically somewhere between 1 and 5 new genes. And that is against a background of a typical plant which has 20,000 to 40,000 genes. Those genes are what is required to define that plant, whether we're talking about the leaves, the roots, the stems, the flowers, etc. So as a portion of genetic change, it's much smaller. That said, we still do undergo safety testing to be sure that the new genes that are introduced are indeed not detrimental.
And I think in terms of regulation and oversight, as you brought up the issue, we're talking about agencies that range from the U.S. Department of Agriculture to the Environmental Protection Agency. I mean, there is a lot of oversight and scrutiny of these technologies to ensure public safety.
That is true. Any product that is on the market today will have undergone safety testing and approvals from USDA, EPI, as well as the Food and Drug Administration. And so current foods on the market have gone through all of these testing. In addition, I think it's important to know that while we do not require labeling, and that may be a matter of political issue, and that's fine, people should know what the stand for labeling is, and that is that the current definition is that the product is equivalent to that that would not – of a conventional form. It does not have any significant changes. If there were to be significant changes, whether it be in nutritional content or any kind of allergen, the current law does require that those things would be have to be labeled. Products on the market today are not labeled because they do not have those changes. Again, whether or not you agree politically, from a scientific and rule standpoint, that is the current situation.
And are there any environmental problems associated with using GMOs?
Well, first I'd like to say that there are environmental impacts associated with any kind of agriculture, whether you're cutting down forests for subsistence agriculture, or plowing fields that causes soil structure to be disturbed, or using insecticides or fungicides to control insects and weeds. To the extent that GM crops are part of the agricultural system, they contribute to the environmental impacts of agriculture. But there are not specific impacts that are unique to the use of GM crops. In fact, the use of GM crops has had significant environmental benefits. For example, during the past 15 years, the use of BT cotton has led to a 25% reduction of worldwide use of insecticides for that crop. Another example is the use of herbicide-resistant crops in the U.S. has made it easier for farmers to adopt no-till or reduced till practices, which can reduce soil disturbance and erosion. Following the adoption of GE soybean in the U.S., the number of soybean farmers using no-till doubled to 50%.
Rebecca, related to that, what about the claim by some anti-GMO groups and even some findings of scientific study about GMO crops fueling an explosion in glyphosate use? We might use the word Roundup, but glyphosate in general. Any truth to those claims?
That claim is true. Roundup-ready crops are engineered to be resistant to the herbicide glyphosate, and the use of these crops has fueled an enormous increase in the application of glyphosate. However, at the same time, there is a nearly perfect anti-parallel line in the use of all the other herbicides that were on the market. Farmers were already using herbicides to control weeds. They just switched the type that they were using. Now, in the case of glyphosate, this was actually an advantage to the environment, since among the herbicides available, glyphosate has much lower toxicity to other organisms. Note, though, that this advantage is unique to the case of glyphosate. Had those crops been engineered for resistance to a less benign herbicide, they would not confer this environmental advantage. Another problem that's arisen from the very widespread use of glyphosate has been the spread of Roundup-resistant weeds. Like antibiotic resistance or resistance of cockroaches to insects, overuse of a product can select for resistant individuals within the population, which then multiply and spread. The Roundup-resistant weeds must now be controlled with other herbicides that are less benign to the environment.
And I know that there's a major push nationally, but Michigan, but nationally as well, in training and education with producers in terms of pesticide, insecticide, and herbicide application, and using some of the GPS technology and things of that nature, a lot of producers have been able to reduce, put exactly what they need on their crops as opposed to using excess amounts of glyphosate, for example.
Yeah, there certainly has been a trend towards more precision agriculture and using a lot of advanced technologies, including GPS, to be able to identify exactly where the problem spots are and reduce overall use. It's not a benefit to a farmer either to apply excess chemicals, both for the not only environmental concerns, which farmers do care about, but also economic concerns and time spent on the machinery.
Another claim that some groups make, and it gets into the human health issue and the nutrition issue. I've read a lot on this particular issue. My producer, Russ White, knows how passionately I feel about the need to educate the public on what the science says. But from my reading, Rebecca, and correct me if I'm wrong, there is virtually no scientific evidence that there are any deleterious nutritional effects to GMOs.
Yeah, and I think I'm best answering that by directly quoting the results of academic and scientific studies. And I'd like to say first off that every major scientific society worldwide, including dozens from Europe, have come to the same conclusion that GM foods on the market are as safe as their conventional counterparts. And I would like to directly cite the conclusions of major reports. In 2005, there was a report from the International Council for Science representing 111 National Academies of Science and 29 scientific unions. And in 2010, there was a report from the European Directorate General for Research. The 2010 report states, directly quoting, "The main conclusion to be drawn from the efforts of more than 130 research projects, covering a period of more than 25 years of research and involving more than 500 independent research groups, is that biotechnology, and in particular GMOs, are not more risky than conventional plant breeding." And I specifically chose to emphasize this report from European studies because the resistance there is even greater than here.
Why is it that so many people, particularly in Europe, but also in the United States, seem to be resistant to what science has to say about GMOs?
That's a really tough question to answer, and there are a lot of complicating factors. I think that we as scientists, I hope that the message that we can send is what we do know. In the same way that we have a consensus about climate change, we have a consensus about the safety of the current use of the technology. The other thing that those reports emphasize and I would share is that as we continue to develop technology, we need to continue to make tests and make tests that are appropriate to the level of risk that we're considering. I think the other thing that comes into play is that while the safety issues are often played up, I think there are many underlying social and economic factors that come into play with people's concerns. And at that point, we certainly get beyond my area of expertise. And I also think that people can have a range of opinions there. And so I think it's important to distinguish between whether your concern is for one of the social or political or economic aspects relative to the safety aspects, and that I hope that people can separate those concerns as they make decisions about these technologies.
That was Dr. Kirk Heinze with the Michigan State University Horticulture Professor Dr. Rebecca Grummet. He's the host of Greening of the Great Lakes, heard on WKAR's MSU Today. It's also an occasional feature here on Current State. Sue Carter with the MSU School of Journalism here for Vacationing Mark Bayshore on Current State.